Welcome to Season 11, Episode 24 of the Ubuntu Podcast. In this episode, we're going to discuss Academy. We'll also have some webby love, and we'll go over your feedback. I'm Mark, and joining me this week are the Ubuntu Podcast A-Team, the three amigos, together once again. It's Martin.
Hello.
And Alan.
Bonjour.
I'll get you.
Been on holiday, Alan?
No.
No? Oh. Martin, have you been on holiday?
We.
Excellent. That means yes, doesn't it?
It does mean yes. I almost said si. The urge to speak Spanish is strong. And anyone that met me at UbuCon Europe in Spain earlier this year knows my Spanish is pretty terrible. I've been on holiday. And also, I would just like a point of correction, right of reply. I was working in Montreal, not gallivanting about in Montreal.
So this is the flaw in the plan with us having a pop at people who are presenters on the show.
Yes. I was working in Montreal and then shortly afterwards went on holiday for a couple of weeks. And that's why I've not been doing the podcast.
So where did you go on holiday? Somewhere in France?
Yes, in France to the Dordogne Valley. So some friends of ours, their parents have got a couple of houses in a really remote village. And they said, hey, we're going out there. Do you want to join us? And we thought, that sounds like a good wheeze. So, we packed the car full of all of our things and we spent a few days driving down there, stopped off along the way. In fact, we stopped at Alençon on our journey, stayed in Alençon overnight. And the significance of Alençon is it's the twin town of Basingstoke.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was good.
Do they have lots of roundabouts?
Yeah. Is it made of concrete like Basingstoke?
No, it's actually rather attractive. But we did drive down the Avenue de Basingstoke.
Wow.
Amazing.
Stoke.
Yeah. Yes.
I was in Paris once and I found Place de Scunthorpe.
Yeah. Anyway, so some of the standout things about where we went is it was a very remote place, so had no internet except for when we went to large towns, so on trips and stuff.
How did you cope?
It was brilliant. I loved it. It took one day. We kept saying, what are we going to do tomorrow? Oh, let's go to the caves. And then you pick your phone up, start research where the caves are, and then you realize, I have no means of doing this. So it was like, right, where is there a tourist information office? So you drive to a town and pick up loads of pamphlets, and then you've got like all this offline,
material. Oh gosh, I remember that. It's like family holidays from when I was 8 years old, sitting in the caravan, poring over like all of the leaflets.
Yeah, it's great. It was really good fun. I quite enjoyed it. It was a bit of a throwback, but it was good fun. And we went to see castles and we kayaked on the Dordogne and swam in lakes. And the best part, my favorite part, was at night when we're sat out, having done our barbecues and what have you. It's pitch black and there's no light pollution. And you look up and you can see the Milky Way with the naked eye, and you can also satellite spot with the naked eye, and we even saw the ISS whiz past a couple of times. Excellent. So it was pretty great, really good fun.
Well, I'm glad it was worth missing out on being on the show.
Yeah.
it sounds like it was all right there.
And it was nice being a listener again. I really enjoyed that. And I thought Das Geek, Ryan, did a really great job for the couple of episodes that he stepped in for. I think we should get him back on again.
Only if it means we get to send you to France again.
God, charming.
Right, on that note, I think we'd better get on with the show. Alan, you've been away as well. Where have you been?
Yeah, I've been working.
I do believe gallivanting around Vienna is what you've been doing.
That's exactly what I was doing, yes. I went to Vienna at the weekend just gone for a short trip to the annual KDE conference called Academy with a K.
I see what they did there.
Yes, and it's held in different locations each year, and this year happened to be in Vienna. We had some organizational changes within the company recently, which meant the person who was supposed to be going wasn't going. So it was a bit of a last-minute trip. I wasn't planning to go, and then surprise, I am going, and I am so glad I went. I'm so glad I made a bit of effort to sort out the flights and accommodation and everything. I flew SleazyJet and also discovered an airline I'd never heard of called Level, which was a surprise to me. I didn't know there were airlines that I didn't know, but it was, there you go. And I couldn't stop looking at their logo because their logo is a square, which is cut in half horizontally with green on the bottom and blue on the top, like a horizon, like a level. Yeah. And it just, I kept thinking of pixels and Minecraft and stuff every time I looked at it. It's very bizarre. Anyway, stayed in an Airbnb. It was lovely. And the conference itself runs from, there was a pre, event social on the Friday night. And then the actual main event starts on Saturday and Sunday, where they have mostly talks and reports from various teams on the Saturday and Sunday. And then Monday through to Friday, they have hacking sessions and birds of a feather sessions for groups that have special interest in particular areas and planning sessions for the next few months. It was, I was only there from Friday to Tuesday. I left late Tuesday night, but yeah, it was great.
So what sort of talks do they, do you have at an academy?
So I had no idea. I didn't really have, I didn't look at the schedule for talks because there are only two rooms and I figured I could make a decision on the day as to which talks I would go to. And the keynote was from a guy from TJWG, Transitional Justice Working Group. And I'd never heard of this organization. It's an NGO based in South Korea and they investigate, crimes that are occurring in North Korea, but because they can't go to North Korea, they interview people who've escaped from North Korea and interview them, and they gather all this data, mainly about human rights violations, and they gather all this data to correlate multiple interviews with different people to try and identify things like sites of graves and sites of other atrocities that have happened, so that at some point when North Korea does open up at some point, they can go in and also find locations for paperwork, so that they can identify who's responsible and, you know, we can exhume graves and, you know, deal with them in, you know, a respectful way.
Well, I don't want to sound flippant, but given that this is obviously quite a serious topic, but did they use KDE when they're doing this?
That's exactly why he was talking, because they use free software to do. They're an NGO with a limited amount of money, a startup NGO, he called them, and they have a limited amount of funds, and so they use free software for storing data and having free software desktops because they're very concerned about people trying to hack into their systems and get data out of them. Because if the North Koreans know what the Transitional Justice Working Group know, then they can go and hide the paperwork or move it or hide the graves or move people's bodies and stuff like that. So it was a super fascinating. And, you know, their focus on privacy and respect for the people who are coming out of North Korea and respect for the dead in North Korea and all this kind of stuff. It was just fascinating. And there is, in fact, a publication that you can read. They've got a PDF, their report that they put out last year. And if you just search for TJWG, you'll find it. It's fascinating reading with some of the data, not deep dive on all the data because they don't want to reveal it all. But it's fascinating reading. So yeah, that was one. There was a talk about Wikipedia and, the Wikimedia Foundation, whole bunch of other interesting talks. There were reports from, getting back on topic for KDE, there were reports from working groups. So KDE have this concept of working groups where people who are a bit like community groups, you know, any people who have a special interest in something. So there's a promo team, for example, and they report on their successes over the year. So they just had each group stood up and gave a, you know, 5-10 minute presentation at the end of the day on how things have been going. Stuff like that.
Yeah.
So you've been referring to KDE have, you know, these groups and what have you. Who are the people that attended this? You know, we know some of the developers in the KDE community, and we know that Blue Systems are involved there. But how many people were there, and where, you know, what were they representing different projects?
Yeah, that's a good question. So it was people who are involved in the KDE community and some students from nearby, because it's a university town. And we're in the university building. So there were some people outside the project. But there was a lot of KDE people, like people who develop, who are responsible for developing KDE applications, like KDE PIM developers were there, mm-hmm. and people who work on other components like KDE Discover, the app store, mm-hmm. And people responsible for the desktop itself, and KDE Neon, their kind of reference distribution of KDE products. So there was about 100 plus, I think maybe more, somewhere between 100 and 200 people there. There's a group photo. You could count all the people in the group photo and that'll tell you how many people were there.
Right.
But there were also people from Blue Systems. I think basically all the employees of Blue Systems were there, who are the people paid by Blue Systems to work on KDE and KDE Neon. So mm-hmm. people like Scarlett and Harold and Jonathan Riddell and Elish and a lot of other people I recognize either online or have met before. It mm-hmm. was nice to meet up with them. And the one overriding thing I get from Academy is they are all so friendly. It's such a welcoming event and everyone is just so nice. It was really, really, because I've never been to an Academy before and I've only been a KDE user for 6 months. So, you know, I'm quite new to all of this and I'm learning quite a lot and learning some of the names. And there's a lot of people there who know each other and obviously I don't. So, but they were very welcoming.
That's lovely to hear, because it can be kind of difficult to get yourself involved in a community when you're on the outside, on the periphery, coming in, and you don't know who the people are and, you know, what the traditions of the events are and things like that.
And they had some sessions in some of the rooms about projects that either people have been maintaining for a long time and they need some help, or they want to just present the status of what it is. So one that I heard that was presented was K Tech Lab. Now, KDE suffers greatly, and I think they know this, with naming things. Like mm-hmm. you put a K on it, put some random letters, and that's the name of your application. K Tech Lab is one. It's been around for a long time, and it's a circuit simulator. So you can mm-hmm. like drag a bulb and a battery and some wires and a switch, and then, you know, as soon as you press the switch, the light comes on in this little simulation. It's a great way to educate people about simple circuitry. But the guy who maintains it, he's obviously clearly passionate about this because he's been maintaining it for a while, but it's based on some old technology. It's got bits of KDE 3 still in it, and it needs migrating.
I'm looking at some screenshots and it does look like it's
right. Yeah. But it's really very cool. He gave a demo of it and it's, you know, it's perfectly functional. It's it's just based on some old technology. So it's fallen out of favor and it's not in a lot of repositories because it uses KDE 3 technology. So he's put out this call to ask if people would help migrate to some of the technologies that are in KDE 4 and then KDE 5 so that he can, you know, support it longer term. Mm. So that was an interesting talk. And the other one was a project called Atelier, A-T-E-L-I-E-R. And this was super interesting to me because it's a program with two parts. There's a front end and a back end, and the back end is called AtCore, A-T-Core. Mm-hmm. And this is a 3D printer manager software.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So there's a GUI where you can feed it the files that you would feed a 3D printer. And it can give you a like render on the screen of what the thing will look like. But you can also like connect to AtCore on a remote machine, maybe like a Raspberry Pi running attached to the printer, and manage those remote printers. So you can sit at your computer and maybe your printer is out in the garage. You can manage your printer and send it print jobs from your desktop, from this GUI, this KDE application. And it supports lots of different types of printers. It also has a feature where you can interact with a webcam, so you can have a remote webcam looking at the printer, so you know whether it's actually printing the thing correctly, and you can look at that on your desktop from a remote location. It also has the ability to manage multiple printers, so if you're a company that's printing lots of things on, like, you've got an array of printers, you can manage them all simultaneously. It's quite early days and they've got a lot of work to do, but it was really great to see a brand new application being developed using Qt technologies and KDE. And And it's something that I have particular interest in because I've recently bought a 3D printer. So, yeah, that was really fascinating. I was really impressed with that, actually.
So you mentioned some of the birds of a feather sessions. What are some of the things that get discussed there?
So one of them was the KDE promo BOF, the promo team. Something I didn't realize, the KDE organization is a non-profit organization. KDE EV is the mm-hmm. German organization, and they actually only have three employees. There's one person who does admin and like sorts out things like accommodation and flights and stuff like that. I'm sure there's other stuff they do. I'm not trying to demean their work, but that's part of their role.
Yeah.
And then there are two other people who work in the promo team. So basically the KDE organization paid employees consists of an admin person and two PR people. And the promo boff was sitting around looking at, stats for things like, you know, how many people are using Plasma desktop versus how many people are using other desktops that are quite popular, and where do we get that kind of data from? Things like Debian's popcorn utility mm-hmm. stats were cited as one way. Mm-hmm. And also looking at, you know, how popular the tweets are that we're putting out and how popular the blog posts are and what kind of success. So it was all about, you know, trying to generate more interest in KDE and promote KDE and Plasma desktop and all the things that go with it.
They must be feeling pretty good at the moment, because my reading of the community is that there's a lot of interest, renewed interest mm-hmm. and energy around Plasma. Yeah. Right now, sort of for about the last 9 months or so, it's been getting a lot of positive attention.
Yeah, totally. The numbers were, you know, up and to the right.
Yeah.
Generally, but not like rocketing hockey stick up to the right. Mm-hmm. And they were talking about how they can improve that and what they can do to get the message out and who they can reach out to and what they could do. And we had a really good discussion, because that's the kind of thing you and I do at Canonical. So I gave mm-hmm. them some tips of what we've learned about, you know, social messages and stuff like that. So that was really cool. And then there were a couple of boffs about snaps and flat packs. It's quite funny, in the summary at the end of the day, Alesh was giving a brief rundown of what happened in each of the boffs, and in the flat pack and snap boff, he said nobody was hurt. There were no punch ups. Nobody died. It was fine. And it was totally respectful. All of the sessions were, it was, you know, just open discussion of, you know, how can we improve things? How can we move everything forward? Mm-hmm. You know, and get the best experience for the users.
Cool.
It was super, super interesting.
Although amusing, I was discussing with someone in the community about, you know, the whole, flat pack versus snap thing, and that there is no animosity between those two teams. No. At a developer level, you know, we go to them, they come to us. We've done a bunch of work with them to land XDG portal support in SnapD, and they help facilitate that upstream so that snaps now use the same mechanisms for desktop integration that flat packs use. And, you know, they came to us because they had some issues, and they were asking us how we'd worked around particular issues. So at a development level, snaps and flatpak, we get on just fine. We in fact, Alan and I know the person that's running all of the community efforts over there, and we get on really well with Sanya. But then, you know, some of the sites, you know, and Reddit, they paint this like it's a war that's going on, and it's really not like yeah, that.
It's true. The same thing at the distro level, actually. There was a distro boff mm-hmm. where they were just presenting their distros. Like, each person would get up and give a 5-minute overview of their distro and what's their unique selling point and why you should care about it. And then there were loads of questions about how do you deal with bug reports and what do you do when people want new features and all that kind of stuff. And we just had an open discussion between all the different distros about, you know, how you do what you do and what sets you different from others. Mm. There was a lot of interesting stuff going on there. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I would highly recommend, if you're even vaguely interested in getting involved in KDE, you look out for the next academy. I don't think they've decided where it is. They're still looking for a venue for 2019. But if you're interested in, you know, KDE and all that kind of good stuff, then you should totally go.
Is it open to the public?
Yeah.
As well? You don't have to be part of a particular project?
No, you don't. There are some sessions that are closed. So there was the board meetings and stuff like that, administrative stuff. But
stuff you probably don't want to go to anyway.
Yes, board being the word. But the venue was great as well. The university building had super fast Wi-Fi. The rooms that we're in were air conditioned, which was good because it was boiling over there. Yeah. Really, really warm. I was really, really happy with that. And when I left on Tuesday, because obviously I left partway through, it's still running now as we're recording this, through till Friday.
Oh, really?
Wow. I left and went around and said goodbye to everyone. And they were all asking me to make sure, you know, did you enjoy yourself? Did you get out of it what you wanted? And, you know, all that kind of stuff. It was just, lovely. I can't say a bad word about it. It was just a really, really good event.
Great. And now it's time for some Webby love.
Oh, that's new.
Yes. So this is a love for a web-related thing. This week, it's a tool called Antisocial, which is a browser extension. It works on Firefox. I'm not sure if it works on Chrome as well. But the idea is that you give it a list of websites, which it was originally conceived with social media in mind. But basically, if you don't want to be distracted or hounded by social media all day, if you tend to check it too much, or you know, you might click links that go to social media sites when you don't want to be looking at them, this will just block them for the period of time when you say. So you can set up a schedule for when it should block them, and you try and go to that website and it says nope. But if you really need to go to the website, it's also got a snooze button which you can configure so that it will turn off the blocking for an amount of time, and then it won't let you snooze again for an amount of time.
So is this parental controls for people with no self-discipline?
Kind of, yeah.
Right.
The reason that I like it is because I was also thinking of something else which would be nice to be able to do, which is when you're on a website that does something where you just think, this website doesn't, you know, this doesn't warrant my custom. You know, it pops up annoying things telling you to subscribe to their newsletter while you're trying to read the content, or, you know, it just has a track record of really poor articles, and you think, you know, if I click a link here again by mistake in the future, I'd want to know that I'd blocked this rather than falling into the same trap again. So you can add them to this list, and in the future it'll say, oh yeah, you know, this is on your list, but you can still say, oh, but this time I really want to read the article. And it's also developed by Wayne Myers, who was at OgCamp 2011 in Farnham, talking about making music with Creative Commons tools, and also played some music for us in the evening.
Huh.
Yes.
That's rather cool.
Mm. Yes.
Oh, I might have to give this a go.
So yeah, Antisocial. Check it out.
We love getting your feedback. If you've got a comment about something you hear on the show, why don't you drop us an email on show@ubuntupodcast.org.
And now it's time for all your wonderful feedback. And first up, we had an email to show@ubuntupodcast.org.
Yes, this came from Phil Roche, and he says that he recently purchased a Thunderbolt Akito Node external GPU enclosure and was having some trouble updating the firmware on Linux. He said it's supposedly possible to update the Thunderbolt device firmware by copying some firmware binaries to a specific mounted directory, and he contacted the Akito support to see if they'd be able to supply the binary files, but that isn't something that they were prepared to do. Okay. So in his response, he suggested that they join the Linux vendor firmware project to allow users to apply updates more easily, and they responded to let him know that they've spoken to their engineers and they're setting up an account. So he was like, that's great news. And then he followed up a day later and he said, I've got a small update. Akito are now listed as a vendor in the LVFS vendor list with status vendor is testing the LVFS.
Excellent.
So Phil actually works at Canonical, and I shared a cab with him in Seattle a few months ago where we were talking about external GPU enclosures and all the rest of it. And he contacted me on IRC with this, you know, this little story. And I said, I'll send that into the show. That's a good example of, you know, how you can contribute to improving, yeah, you know, Linux in a very different kind of way. Yeah. And also, you know, off the back of all of these other big names getting involved in LVFS, this is another great addition to that project. So I hope one day we'll see their firmware turn up there, so people with those GPU enclosures can easily update them.
Mm.
Excellent. Next up, Daniel Llewellyn emailed us.
The prolific creator of Snappings has built another Tome of Immortality enshrining TV Headend into the sarcophagus of Snapcraft treasure.
Ooh. That's handy. I use TV Headend.
Do you?
I do.
Yeah, I've never used it.
What is it?
It's like Myth TV, but easy.
Ah, that's the best selling point of any piece of software, right, that's like another thing.
Yeah, it does the back end part of managing your tuners and, right, downloading schedules and setting recordings and things like that.
That,
and then you have a front end like Kodi that then connects to that and does the actual showing you the TV.
Right. So is it like a web accessible thing that you configure? And ooh,
exactly. Yes.
Oh my goodness. I'm going to have to go in the loft and dig out my DVB-T tuners and have a play with this.
Yes. Well, while you're doing that, give the first episode of the bug report from the previously Linux Voice guys a listen. They have an interesting tip about using those tuners to listen into other radio signals that are going around.
Yeah, including aircraft ADS-B signals.
Yeah. Next, Edward Crosby emailed us.
First of all, great show. Thank you. I look forward to listening to you guys each week. Aw, keep up the good work, he says.
I usually edit those bits out.
I'm reaching out to you in hopes that you can assist. I've recently become acquainted with Ubuntu Server 18.04 and have discovered that configuring a static IP is not the same as the previous versions. Now there is NetPlan. It is not possible to script out the network configuration now that Ubuntu... Oh, he said, is it not possible to script out the network configuration now that Ubuntu Server 18.04 is using NetPlan? I was trying to tweak my shell script to configure the writing of the YAML, but it seems formatting is crucial when editing a YAML file, and I was not having much luck. Any ideas, thoughts, or solutions? I've not tinkered with this myself. We did have David Britton on, didn't we, in one of the earlier episodes, and he talked about NetPlan as being a convenient way to configure all of this complicated stuff.
Yes, presumably it must be automatable.
Yeah, and yes, YAML is very finickety about formatting, like, you know, indentation and colons and quotes and dashes and stuff.
Yeah.
We get that a lot when we're doing Snapcraft. I don't know, if you're using something like Python to do your scripting, then there must be libraries that allow you to spit out and read in YAMLs consistently without having to worry about the file format. But if you're shell scripting, then I'm not sure how you do that in a consistent way.
Yeah, I mean, I'd hope that there would be utilities for NetPlan for it in the config, maybe. But I've still got my server running 16.04 and I don't have plans to upgrade it soon. And this is another reason for me to do a lot of research before I do that, because I need a static IP on mine.
I've got a good idea. We have a wide and varied selection of listeners to this podcast. If you know how to automate the configuration of NetPlan, do let us know so we can pass on the information to Edward.
Excellent. Next, Tadeo Doria left a comment on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/c/Ubuntu podcast.
Given how much you've been talking about Linux games for the past few episodes, I wanted to chime in with my feedback as I'm a 3D modeler working on games. I'm part of a team creating a fan-made Star Trek project called Stage 9. It's a deck-by-deck recreation of the Enterprise from the Next Generation. And while it's still in progress, you can download the latest version at stage-9.co.uk. The game is partially developed on Kubuntu, as that's my OS of choice. I use Blender for 3D models and Inkscape for designing the graphics and UI. The project originally didn't have a Linux build, and that only changed when I came on board, as naturally I wanted to play what I was helping create. However, once the Linux build became available, we saw it had a great number of downloads, as apparently a lot of Linux users are also Star Trek fans.
Surely
who
not.
Knew? We hope to continue supporting Linux in all of our releases going forward and seeing the gaming community on Linux as a whole grow. That's really great. I like that.
That's a great little bit of insight, isn't it? Mm.
Yeah. I'm just looking at some screenshots and it looks awesome. Like, it's really, really detailed and really, really good looking. And in fact, the sort of the external shots kind of look like the shots from the show as well. I may have to download this and have a play with it.
Right then. Daniel Llewellyn, there's a snap that needs making.
Yeah, definitely. Next up, Kay left a comment on our website.
I work for a AAA games company. I can assure you that the self-entitlement and rage is not unique to Linux gamers. See it all the time with Mac and Windows gamers too. Like Mac gamers, due to the small number of players, it's just more noticeable.
Interesting.
Yes, more noise, less signal. It's a shame. Yes, let's hope it improves. And finally, Mike emailed us.
Just to annoy Ian, I would like Alan to use as much reach out as humanly possible for one show. I'm just enjoying myself ecstatically knowing he would grind his teeth to the bone. I found myself saying that again the other day and had to stop myself. Sorry.
Right, and that is all of your feedback for this week. That's all for episode 24.
Yeah, we're all off to Oakham now, aren't we?
We are.
We are. It's time to pack the battle bus.
Or if you're listening to this, we have just come back from Odd Camp.
Oh, yeah. Oh, timey-wimey.
In our timey-wimey battle bus.
Oh, yeah. Gosh.
It's so complicated.
Come and say hello to us at Odd Camp.
Said hello to us.
Yes. Or don't and do it next year, because I assume someone will do an Odd Camp next year as well.
Well volunteered, Alan.
Oh, God. Yeah, it'll be in Farnborough if it is.
Well, you know, it was actually quite good when it was in Farnham, and it was convenient for me at the time as well. So, yes, make it so, number one.